Okay. Tonight's class is on the story of Mechirat Yosef, the selling of Yosef. What we have been studying for the past 2 weeks are the preceding verses in chapter 37 of Sefer Bereshit, which set the background for today's lesson of the selling of Yosef. I'll quickly highlight some thoughts from the previous two lessons very, very quickly, and then I'll outline what we're going to do today. I'm sure that many of you received the source booklet and said, my goodness, why are they sending so many pages of sources? Well, firstly, the answer is I spread them out, and they're not that many sources, and we're not reading all of them. We're going to refer to them, and the last page, Jewish knowledge and background, but I don't think we're going to study it in depth. So please don't be intimidated by the sources, and I know that they're not in Hebrew. I know that they're not in English, and we'll work with that today and do plenty of translations. And then I'll tell you towards the end what next week's class will be, how the final class of this unit will fit together. What we explored in the previous 2 weeks were the first 11 psukim of chapter 37, Perek Lamed Zayin of Sefer Bereshit. I printed today the source, the psukim for you, in case you don't have a chumash with you, but if you do, feel free to open a chumash if it's cleaner or neater print for you. The chapter opens at Yaakov towards the end of his life after returning to Eretz Yisrael from Beit Lavan, after encountering Esav in what we'll read this week in our Parashat HaShavua. Yaakov finally, after having also the incident with Dinah in the city of Shechem, Yaakov finally wants to live peacefully, and then we're told about Yaakov's descendants, but what we saw when we studied the first class was that Eilat Toldot Yaakov, these are the descendants and the generations of Yaakov, meant something much more than the genealogical progeny of Yaakov, because the only one that we're told about is Yosef, and we learn certain characteristics of Yosef and certain things about Yosef's interaction with his brothers, both the children of Leah and with the children of the Shfachot, the children of Bilhah and Zilpah. And we saw in the first lesson about Yaakov's favoritism of Yosef and the brothers' reaction to that, their increased both hatred and their lack of being able to speak peacefully to Yosef, even when he sought their welfare. Last week's class took us into Yosef the dreamer and how he turned and transformed himself from a dreamer and a favorite son into a hated brother, and we studied and compared the two dreams and the reactions to the two dreams. And this week, we are now entering into the story of the selling of Yosef, which heavily relies on the entire background. It relies on the background that's been set of Yosef's relationship with his brothers, the special relationship that Yaakov has with Yosef, and the increased tension in the greater Yaakov and children household as the brothers are growing and continuing in their understanding of Yosef and what he thinks he's all about, which are the dreams, and what Yaakov also seems to think he's about. So today we will explore what is called a big chunk of text. We'll be exploring the bulk of Perek Lamed Zayin from Psukim Yud Bet to Lamed Vav. We obviously won't focus on every aspect of this. We are going to try and highlight three topics for discussion in today's shiur. We'll go through the entire story of the selling of Yosef, try and highlight some ambiguities. Topic number one that we'll be focusing on is who really sold Yosef into slavery, what really happened to Yosef in the chapter, and we'll see that the, call it, standard way that we all read the story many, 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 many times, that the brothers sold Yosef into slavery, may not be the only option out there for reading the psukim. Second small subject that will be connected to that is there's a verse that says that Reuven returned. Small, quick, tiny side discussion of where Reuven was and what his role might have been. But in our study of what really happened to Yosef, we'll try and focus on what the Torah tells us, who was involved at which stage in the process, which brothers when, because this will set the background for next week's class, which is the continuation of the Yosef dynamic with his brothers and how ultimately they achieve reconciliation and which brothers play which roles and how that all has its roots back in chapter 37. But the third and more significant topic that we'll be devoting a good portion of today's shiur to is an interesting motif in rabbinic literature, which I hope will be new for most of you, which is a very interesting question, talking about the significance of the Torah highlighting for us how much money Yosef was sold into slavery for. The Torah tells us that he was sold for 20 kasef, for 20 silver coins, and we'll see that they're developed based on that a very interesting Midrashic tradition, which gets played out in different directions and ultimately ends up in our keynotes, our elegies that we say on Tisha B'Av morning. So stay tuned for Tisha B'Av. But here we go. Let's first do a quick read-through of the Psukim and try and highlight some of the ambiguities and the questions that begin to arise when we study the verses. So we're opening up Perek Lamed Zayin, chapter 37, Pasuk Yud Bet. You have the sources in front of you, hopefully. Pasuk Yud Bet. Vayelchu Echav li'ot et hatzon avihem bishchem. His brothers go to take the sheep out to pasture, the sheep of their father, in the city of Shechem. And I apologize, I had meant to scan a map into the source packet, which I forgot to do. I'm sorry. Shechem, for people that have any element of familiarity with the geography of Eretz Yisrael, Shechem is north of Yerushalayim. And what we will see is that there are going to be a few important cities that are going to play into today's discussion. Okay, the brothers are coming from the Hebron area. That's where Yaakov's family lives. Hebron is south of Jerusalem. So imagine a city, Hebron, south of Jerusalem. Parallel to the middle of Yam HaMelech almost, or the top third of Yam HaMelech. Shechem is significantly to the north of that. And there's going to be a third city involved in today's discussion, the city of Dothan, which is located even further north of Shechem. And the Dothan-Shechem-Hebron route is the north-south trade route, not only of Eretz Canaan in ancient times, but of the ancient Near East. Okay, so these three cities that are mentioned in our parak, Hebron, Shechem, Dothan, they're all on a north-south line, a north-south trade route, and they ultimately connect to the spice route down to Egypt. So the brothers go to shepherd their father's sheep in Shechem, north of way north of Hebron, where the family is living. Vayomer Yisrael el Yosef, halo achecha ro'im b'shechem, l'cha v'eshlachecha alehem vayomer lo hineni. Yaakov suggests to Yosef that he go to see his brothers who are shepherding in Shechem, and Yosef says, hineni. So famous word from already the beginning of Sefer Bereshit, which always means not only here I am and ready and raring to go, but it means that the person is eager to fulfill the mission at hand. Pasuk Yud Dalet, Vayomer Lo, Yaakov says to Yosef, Lech na re'et shlom achecha ve'et shlom hatzon. He gives him a job. Go check out your brother's welfare and shlom hatzon, the welfare of the sheep. V'hashiveni davar, and come back to me with an answer. V'yishlachehu me'emek Hebron, Yaakov sends Yosef from the valley of Hebron, down south, Vayavo Shechema, and he comes north to Shechem. Just in these three verses alone, how many times does the root Ach, brother, appear in these three verses? Send in your answers, please, or say them on a mic. In the first three verses of this section, the root of brother, achiv, echav, achicha, and achecha, appear three times. And what we'll continue to see is that becomes the central, right, thank you. Thank you, Ray. This becomes the central word in the story here, and trying to understand the story. This is a story about brothers. And as we'll see, it's a story of dysfunctional brothers. It's a story of brothers who are having a hard time acting brother-like. But this is a story about brothers and who is and isn't a brother and how brothers should or shouldn't act towards each other. Let's continue reading the narrative. Pasuk tetva, vayimtzaehu ish, vihine to'er basadeh. Yosef encounters an anonymous ish, an anonymous person, which obviously leads the Midrash to associate this ish with an angel, a non-human person, but we can take it as a literal person, but an unnamed individual. And this person, he's wandering in the field. This ish sees Yosef wandering in the field and says, hey, what are you looking for? Can I help you? Do you need directions? And again, makes sense because Yosef is not from this region. He's not from the Shechem region. And if you remember the last time the brothers were in Shechem, what should we, the reader, think when we're told that the brothers pick Shechem as the place to go shepherd their sheep? What happened in chapter 34 in the city of Shechem? And how did it end? Again, it would take you too long to write this, probably in the story of Dina. Excellent, Tova and Pnina, thank you. Right, the story of Dina and the rape and the basically the unhappy ending of the story, the way the brothers go in and murder many of the males in the city. And the story of chapter 34 ends with Yaakov rebuking Shimon and Levi, who were the leaders in that episode, for ruining his relations with the natives in the land. So the last time we went to Shechem, it didn't end happily. So ironically, right, what are we supposed to think when the brothers choose Shechem as their place of pasture? And now here goes Yosef to Shechem. The man asks, what are you looking for? And he answers in Pasuk Kedzayin, Vayomer et achaya nochi mevakesh. I'm looking for my brothers. And there's a big irony to that phrase, because Yosef is actually really looking for his brothers. He's trying to figure out, are they brothers to him today? How are we all going to interact today? Yosef has been haughty and boasted about his dreams, and his father has clearly favored him publicly and made him a favorite garment. And the brothers, we're told, have hated him and added hatred and were jealous of him. That's what we've read up to now in the Perek. And now we're told, Etachai Anochi Mevakesh. He's literally looking for his brothers. He wants to see how everybody's going to interact today. Hagida Nali Efo Hem Ro'im. Please tell me where they are shepherding. Pasuk Yudzayin. Vayomer Ha'ish. This anonymous Ish tells him. Nas'umi Ze'oh, they left. Sorry, they're no longer in Shechem. Kishamati Omrim Melcha Dotaina. I actually heard them say, let's go to Dotan. Dotan is a city north of Shechem, even further north in the center of Israel. But again, Dotan, Shechem, Dotan, and then going south, Shechem, and going much further south to Hebron, you're on a major north-south artery, a trade route in the ancient world. So the brothers said, let's go to Dotan. Vayelech Yosef Acharachav. And Yosef goes seeking out his brothers, and he finds them in Dotan. So up till now, so far today, we meet Yosef as being very obliging. His father sends him on this mission. Yosef not only goes to Shechem and looks for his brothers, but he doesn't find them there, and he continues his journey, goes further north to Dotan, he seeks them out, and he goes to find his brothers. Pasuk Yudchet. The brothers see Yosef coming from afar. Now we also ought to wonder, how come Yosef doesn't go out with the brothers initially? Right? How come the brothers go to, it seems that very clearly already there's a hierarchy and a distinction between the roles in the family. The brothers go out to shepherd their father's sheep, and Yosef stays at home. Yosef, the favorite son that we met earlier in the chapter, the one that his father is busy making special robes for, he's the at-home boy, and the brothers go out to shepherd the sheep. So they see him in Pasuk Yudchet, in verse 18, coming from afar. Uvitera mikrav alehem, and before he even approaches them, vayitnaklu oto lahamito. They begin to plot how to murder him. The brothers whom we've met previously in this chapter as twice hating Yosef and adding hatred, and thirdly, we were told they added jealousy, and fourth, we were told they couldn't speak in peace to him. They see him from afar. He doesn't even get near. They don't even know what message he's coming with. Right? They must probably assume that he's coming with yet another boastful dream. Right? Or maybe he has a new cloak that his father made for him that morning. Right? They see Yosef coming, and already they start to plot to kill him. Pasuk Yotet. And now in these coming verses, it's important to pay attention what role different ones of the brothers play, and who is named and who isn't named. Pasuk Yotet. Vayomru ish echav. Elachiv, hine ba'al ha'chalamot ha'lazeba. One brother says to the other, anonymously, right? And we don't know if it's just a pair of two who are talking, or if this is, we're not told names, because this is what each brother is saying to the other one, right? All the brothers are saying to the other one, quote, here comes the dreamer guy. Let's see which dream he has today. And what do they say in Pasuk Chaf? V'ata, we're not going to wait to hear his dreams. L'chu v'nahargehu, let's go kill him. V'nashlicheu ba'achara borot, and we'll throw him in a pit. V'amarnu chaya ra'a chalatu. Zel, we have a good answer for Yaakov. We'll say he got eaten up by a wild animal. V'nir'eh ma'yihyu chalomotav, ha ha ha. We'll see how his dreams end up. So the brothers, right, they're statements are opened and closed with the element of the dreams. They hate Yosef, and they've increased their hatred, having heard two of his dreams. They're jealous of him. They can't speak peacefully to him. They don't even have to have him approach and talk to him and to them and tell them his latest dream or what his mission is, why he's coming. They simply see him coming. They hate him so much that they just want to do away with him immediately. Their goal is to kill him and then cover up. Throw him in a pit and tell Yaakov he got eaten up, and that's the end of the dreams. Pasuk Chafalas. Vayishma Reuven, Reuven being the oldest of all of the brothers, and we would assume oldest means most responsible. Vayatzilehu miyadam. He hears this plot, and he spares Yosef from this, from their hands. Vayomer lona kenu nafesh. Reuven gives what we would call a humanist argument, right? Let's not murder. Please, let's not get involved in murder. And we don't have the response of the other brothers to Reuven after Pasuk Chafalas. But it seems that they weren't easily convinced after Pasuk Chafalas, because what does Reuven repeat in Pasuk Chafet? A new idea. Vayomer alehem Reuven, al tishpachu dam. First he says, let's not murder. Murder is not good. We're not going to be involved with murder. Hashlichu oto el habor hazeh. Let's throw him into this pit here, asher bamidbar, here in the desert. V'yad al tishlachu bo, and don't let our hands be laid against him. L'man hatzil oto miadam l'hashivo el aviv. And then the Torah tells us, like in parentheses, what was going through Reuven's mind. Why did Reuven try to save Yosef from the brothers with this argument of, let's just not murder, we don't want to have our hand involved in killing him? His goal was to spare Yosef and to save him and return him back to his father. So Reuven here, and we'll talk more about Reuven's, what he missed in this picture, but Reuven here is trying to act as the Bechor. He wants to act as the responsible elder son who can't let brothers kill another brother. As much as they hate him, as bad as he is, right, and as much jealousy as he's provoking, Reuven tells them, we're not going to be involved in murder, and he has a suggestion for how to avoid that. We won't murder him, and he's hoping to return him back to his father. Pasuk Chaf Gimel, Vayhi Kasher Ba Yosef El Achav, Vayakshitu Et Yosef Et Kutanto Vet Ktonet HaPasim Asher Alav. Did the brothers accept Reuven's advice? Yosef comes upon his brothers, and what do? Immediately they strip him of his special robe, that special ketonet pasim that we met at the beginning of the chapter. And what do? Pasuk chapdalad, vayikachuhu vayashlichu oto habora, vahaborek ein bo maim. They throw Yosef into a pit. Have they accepted Reuven's advice? Yes or no? What did they originally plot to do in verse 20? Okay, you say they did accept. Okay, another acceptance. Right, what's the difference between what they originally planned to do in verse 20 and what they actually do in Pasuk Chaf Gimel and Chaf Dalet? What's the difference? They don't actually kill him, exactly. The end result is that he's stuck in a pit is the same. The difference is originally they planned to throw him into a pit dead, and now they're willing to accept Reuven's advice of not being involved in active murder. So we'll do something passive instead. We'll get rid of him by throwing him into a pit. Good. Chashei. Vayishvu le'chol lechem. And this is the three words that seem a little bit out of place, right? They just throw their brother into a pit without even talking to him. They just strip him of his garment and throw him straight into a pit. And now they sit down to have lunch. Seems a little bit inappropriate to be lunching while your brother's screaming in a pit. Vayisu einehem, and now they're checking out the scenery. They're wondering who might come and notice this situation. Vayiru v'hine orchat Yishma'elim ba migil'ad. They see a caravan of Yishma'elim coming from Gil'ad. Gil'ad being on the other side of the Jordan, on the east bank of the Jordan. Ugmalehem nosim nchotu tzri velot hochim lahorid mitzrayma. And their camels are carrying all sorts of spices going down to Egypt, which makes sense from what we said, that Dotan, Shechem, Chavron, that is part of the north-south trade route which connects to the Egyptian spice route. So here are some traders carrying spices going down to Egypt. Vayomer Yehuda el Achav. Yehuda now speaks up. This is the first time we've met Yehuda speaking up. Yehuda speaks to his brothers, and he speaks about a brother. He says, what will we gain? Ma betza, what financial gain is there if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? L'chuvenim karenu li'ishmaelim. Let's make a profit at least. Let's go sell him to the Egyptians. V'yadeinu al tehibo. And of course, like Reuven argued, let's not have our hand involved. Let's not be involved in active murder. Ki achinu v'sarenuhu. Reuven gave a very humanistic argument that murder is bad. Yehuda suggests something as a different motive. Why shouldn't we kill him? Because ki achinu b'sareinu. He's actually our flesh and blood and our brother, and brothers actually don't kill brothers. Vayishma'u echav. The brothers listen to Yehuda, a phrase that we didn't have explicitly in the case of Reuven. And now pasuk chafchet, a verse that we'll focus on in depth today. Vayavru anashim mipol, who are Midianites and merchants, pass by. Vayim shechu vayalu et Yosef min habor, and they pull up Yosef from the pit. Vayim kiru et Yosef la'yishmaelim be'estrim kaset, and they sell Yosef to the Yishmaelim for 20 silver pieces. Vayaviu et Yosef mitzrayim, and they bring Yosef to Egypt. This verse, well, I think many of us read it for years very simply, that the Midianites came and pulled Yosef up from the pit, and who sold Yosef to the Ishmaelites for 20 kesef? Many of us read it that it was the brothers. This verse is clearly ambiguous, and we'll focus in depth on this verse in a few minutes. Who did what here? And we have a new group of people, right? In the previous verse, the plan was let's sell Yosef to the Ishmaelim, this caravan of spice traders who was passing by. And suddenly, in Pasuk Chafchet, we have a group of Midianim, of merchants who are Midianites. Midianites, Ishmaelim, and who does what? Pasuk Chaftet, 29. Vayashav Reuven el Habor. Reuven returns from the pit, and the obvious question is, from where? How did he get separated from the rest of the group? V'hinei en Yosef Tabor, v'yikras begazav, and Yosef's not in the pit, and he tears his clothes in mourning, because his plan, as we were told by the Torah in the end of Pasuk Chaftet, 22, was his plan was that they shouldn't murder him, they should throw him in a pit alive, and that he, Reuven, was planning on coming and taking Yosef out and returning him to his father. So he gets to the pit, he sees it's empty, and he tears his clothes. Vayashav el achav vayomar, hayeled einenu. The kid is missing. He comes back to his brother, and he said, the boy's nowhere to be found. Va'ani ana anivan, what's going to be with me? I'm going to get into trouble. And we'll focus more on that verse next week in our analysis of the different brothers' roles. And now the famous story, they dip the ketonet of Yosef into blood so that they can try and trick Yaakov, and they send it to their father, and they say, Dad, can you figure out whose robe this is dipped in blood? Is this your son's or not? And Yaakov recognizes it, and then Pasuk Lamed Gimel comes to the clear realization that his son has been trampled and eaten alive by a wild beast. And Yaakov tears his clothes in mourning, puts on sackcloth, and mourns for what's described as Yamim Rabim, an extended period, many days. And Pasuk Lamed Hey closes that all of his sons and daughters came to comfort him, and he refused to be comforted, and he cried for Yosef. Yaakov at this point is convinced that Yosef is killed, and that a wild animal trampled him, and that this is his coat that was left at the scene. Pasuk Lamed Vav closes the story. V'hamidanim, a third group seemingly, we had the Yishmaelim, we had the Midyanim with the Yud, and now we have the Midanim without a Yud, so maybe Midanim and Midyanim are the same, one has a Yud and one doesn't, or maybe they're a third group. The Midanim, we're told, sold Yosef to Egypt, to Potiphar, who is one of the chief guys in Paro's household. So what we'll focus on today is what actually happened to Yosef, who did to him, what were the different roles in the story, where was Reuven that he came back to the pit, where had he gone, and thirdly, this rabbinic tradition about what happened to the money that they used for Reuven. So if you turn to the second page of the source book, please, right, what section A, what really happened to Yosef and who sold him into slavery? Source number one, Rashi, is the famous view that I think most of us grew up with, that who pulled Yosef in Pasuk Chafchet out of the pit? We're told that the Anashim Midyanim came by and pulled Yosef out of the pit. Rashi attributes the verb vayimshechu, that they pulled him out of the pit, to Bnei Yaakov. The brothers pulled Yosef out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelim, and the Ishmaelim to the Midianim, and the Midianim to Mitzrayim. So the Yosef passes hands multiple times here in, as far as being sold into slavery, but that the brothers clearly were the ones, according to Rashi and the tradition that most of us grew up with, who took Yosef out of the pit and did the main first transaction. They sold Yosef to the Ishmaelim. What we'll see as we continue is that that's not the only tradition in our classical commentators. Rashi is the view that most of us grew up with, that it's the brothers who unequivocally sold Yosef into slavery. Some of the other commentators take a different perspective. Rashi's grandson, the Rashbam, in Source 2, has a different view. And he makes a strong argument to try and prove that this is what he's convinced the verse says. Let's look for one more moment. Back at the verse itself, Pasuk Chaf Chet. Vaya'avru anashim midyanim socharim, and they pulled, vaya'alu et Yosef binabor, and they lifted up Yosef from the pit, vayimkeru et Yosef vayishma'elim, and they sold Yosef to the Ishmaelites for 20 talents, and vayaviru et Yosef mitzrayim. So Rashi attributed the verbs vayimshechu, vaya'alu et Yosef minabor, to the brothers, vayimkeru. According to Rashi, the brothers sold Yosef to the Ishmaelites for 20 kesef, and it was the Ishmaelites who passed him along to Egypt. The Rashbam is going to attribute the verbs to different subjects. Let's look at the Rashbam for a moment. Vaya'avru anashim midyanim. B'toch sh'ayu yoshvim le'achol lechem, as the brothers were sitting eating their lunch, u'rechokim ayu k'tat min habor levilti achol al hadam, and of course they didn't eat right over the pit, because I mean, it's not really nice to eat while your brother is languishing in an empty, dry, deep pit. U'mamtinin ayu li'ishmaelim shra'u. The brothers were waiting for the Ishmaelites that they saw coming. V'kodim shabau ha'ishmaelim avru anashim midyanim acherim derech sham. But before the Ishmaelite caravan arrived, a different group of people, a group of Midianim, passed by. Ra'uhu babor, and they saw Yosef in the pit, and they pulled him up, u'meshachuhu u'mecharuhu ha-Midianim la'ishma'elim. Who pulled Yosef out of the pit and sold him into slavery, according to the Rashbam? Not the brothers. The brothers were out to lunch, and they were busy watching. They had their eyes on the caravan of the Ishmaelim, and they didn't see a group of Midianim, who must have come from either the other direction, or very, very quickly that they didn't notice. And it's these Midianim who take Yosef out of the pit, they hear him screaming, take him out of the pit, and sell him into slavery to the Ishmaelim. V'yesh lomar, he continues, sha'achim lo yadu. And we'd have to go so far as to conclude that the brothers didn't know. V'afal pi asher katav asher mechartem oti mitzrayma. Later on, when Yosef introduces himself to his brothers and reconciles, he says, I am Yosef that you sold to Egypt. Says the Rashbam, what he must mean is, shehagramat ma'aseim si'ad mechirato, that your deeds led me to be ultimately sold, that you were the key players in my eventually being sold into Egypt, but not that you sold me. And the Rashbam makes it very clear that he's convinced that this is pshuto shel mikra, this is the deep, correct meaning of the real words in the verse, that the Midianim, who happened to pass by before the Ishmaelim got there, they pulled Yosef up from the pit, and they sold Yosef into slavery to the Ishmaelim. And as far as who the other group is, the Midianim that we read about, the Rashbam continues and he equates, correct, the sale to Egypt was not direct even in Rashi's reading. But the big difference between Rashi and his grandson Rashbam is who took Yosef out of the pit and who sold him into slavery the first round. Who sold him the first round into slavery? According to Rashi, it was clearly the brothers who took Yosef out of the pit and sold him. According to Rashbam, the verse about who is the subject of Vayim shechu, vaya'alu, vayim kiru, and that these verbs don't have clear subjects attributed to them. And Rashbam suggests that the clear subject to him is not the group of the brothers, but rather the Midianim. The Malbim goes along the lines of the Rashbam, has some variations. associations to the theme. He tries to actually suggest that in the ancient Near East, why did the Ishmaelim were passing by, or the Midianim, the Malbim kind of gives both options. He says, why did they think that they should take somebody out of a pit and sell him into slavery? And he seems to suggest that there was a norm in the ancient Mideast that somebody who was chayav mitah, somebody who was liable for the death penalty, would often be thrown into a pit and could be taken as a soul, as a slave, by somebody who were to find him. So that they were taking, they assumed that this man in the pit was a criminal and could easily be sold into slavery. So the Malbim, which we won't read in depth, in source 3, goes along the lines of the Rashbam, attributing the sale of Yosef not to the brothers. So we have here what I hope is breaking a little bit of the myth, either the myth called the way we all read growing up, that it was clearly the brothers who Bayim Shechuat Yosef min Abor, they pulled Yosef out of the boar, and they raised him up, and they sold him, and that the verb Bayim Keru refers to the brothers selling Yosef into slavery. What we see is that there's another opinion in our tradition, starting with that of Rashi's grandson. It gets echoed later by Shadal, Luzzatto in the late 18th, early 19th century, and by the Malbim, later in the end of the 19th, 20th century. They're following the tradition that the verbs Vayim Shechu, Vaya'alu, Vayim Keru do not refer back to the brothers doing these acts, but that they refer primarily to the Midianim and potentially also, according to the Malbim, to one group of the Ishmaelim. So who sold Yosef? Either the brothers or these passing by groups. Now where was Reuven there? Rashi quotes two traditions which are found in the Midrash and Bereshit Rabbah, section B, the next page, source number 4. Bereshit Rabbah comments, Vayashav Reuven al Habor, Vehechan Hayah, where the heck was Reuven? How come all the brothers are having lunch and figuring out what to do with this passing by caravan and how to get rid of Yosef? And where's Reuven that he comes back and he goes to look in the pit and his brother's not there? Rabbi Eliezer Amar, Asukaya Besakov Uvata'anito. Reuven was busy doing something else. He wasn't having lunch with his brothers. He was busy doing tshuva, mourning, wearing sackcloth and fasting to atone for a previous sin of his, namely the sin that he was involved in when he got involved in switching his father's bed from one tent to the other. And that when he finished his tshuva rites for that day, his sackcloth and his fast of that day, that's why if he was fasting he wasn't at lunch, then when he finished that, he went to check the pit out, as he had originally hoped, and of course, the brother wasn't there. Second opinion in the Midrash, Rashi in source 5 quotes both of these opinions, is that of Rabbi Yehoshua, who suggests, Kol tirchot habayit hayta mushlachat alav. Remember, Reuven is the Bechor, so where is he? Why isn't he out to lunch with the brothers? Because he had all sorts of other responsibilities of the household of Yaakov resting on his shoulders. Maybe financial responsibilities, maybe treaties with some of the neighboring tribes in the land. We don't know. He had all sorts of responsibilities on his shoulders. Kevan shenifnat, so when he would have free time, when he finished his other responsibilities, halach ve'tzitz lo to habor. Then he went to take a look in the pit. So two options in the Midrash, where was Reuven that he's suddenly coming back to the pit and noticing that Yosef's not there? Either that Reuven is involved in tshuva and in mourning for having sinned by mixing up his, switching his father's bed in a previous episode, or two, he has all sorts of other business to take care of. Reuven's not only a shepherd of his father's sheep, he has other household responsibilities since he's the Bechor, and he was busy doing all of these other things, and when he finished, he came back and he checked the pit. Rashi gives a slight variation of that second opinion and suggests that he wasn't there because it was his day to go serve his father. So he had left because he had other things to do back in Hebron with his father. So far, two elements of the story have been fleshed out a little bit. What exactly happened to Yosef? Who did what? Who sold Yosef into slavery? Either the brothers or these passing by groups of the Midianim and the Ishmaelim, but not the brothers directly. And where was Reuven? What we'll continue with for the rest of the shiur today is a very interesting motif. A motif that focuses on what seems to be a very innocuous word, an innocuous phrase. And the phrase is, when they sell Yosef, in Pasuk in Pasuk Chafchet, right, after they, the unattributed verbs of they pull him out and they lift him out of the pit and they sell Yosef to the Ishmaelim, the Torah tells us be'esrim kasef, that they sell him for 20 silver talents. And there's a very curious tradition that develops based on those 20 silver talents that they sell Yosef for. So we'll spend the rest of today exploring this tradition and seeing how it ultimately gets us to Tisha B'Av. Next week, Bezrat Hashem, we will try and deal with a further, more detailed analysis of the roles of the particular brothers. In our parak, we met Reuven speaking up, and we met Yehuda speaking up, each one giving different arguments. Reuven giving what we'll call the humanitarian argument, let's not murder and let's not be involved in murder, versus Yehuda, who says, we're not going to kill our brother, so at least we may as well make some money, because we don't kill brothers, because he's achinu b'sarenuhu. And we'll flush those, sorry, no pun intended, we'll continue to extend the arguments of Reuven and Yehuda as they develop in the rest of Sefer Bereshit, leading up to the reconciliation between Yosef and his brethren. And we'll try and focus on the roles of the named characters, namely Yosef, Yehuda, and Reuven, who each speak and have a different perspective on brotherhood and leadership. And we'll try and understand which mode of leadership each one represents and what the Torah chooses ultimately as the desired type of leadership for Am Yisrael. So that's next week. Now we'll continue with section C, the tradition that develops to explain the significance of the 20 talents of silver that the brothers receive for selling Yosef into slavery. Let's start with source 6, that of Targum Yonatan ben Uziel. Targum Yonatan ben Uziel, this Aramaic translation of the Torah, translation is a bad word, it's actually a form of commentary, differs of Unkelus, that Unkelus tries to word-for-word reading of the words of the Torah. Yonatan ben Uziel, on the other hand, weaves in multiple midrashic sources in his explanation of the Torah. And our verse is a great example of that. He translates the phrases of selling Yosef for 20 talents to Egypt, to the Ishmaelim. He says, Uzavinu yat Yosef la'aravin. They sold Yosef to the Arabs, to the Ishmaelim, be'asrin ma'im de'kasef, for 20 talents of silver. Zavnu minhon sandalim. And what did they do with those 20 talents of silver? They went and they bought sandalim, sandals, shoes for themselves. What we'll see is there's a very interesting tradition about shoes being part of the story here, and we'll have to see how this tradition develops. Source 7. Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, a relatively late midrash, which may also be based on the same midrashic tradition that Yonatan ben Uziel wove into his Targum, explains the story as follows. This is clearly this tradition of the 20 talents of silver and the connection to shoes, sandalim or na'alayim, is clearly based on the rabbinic tradition that who sold Yosef into slavery? Refer all to the brothers. That it's not the Rashbam's way of reading. This is the classic Rashi, the classic way we grew up. That it's the brothers who pull Yosef out of the pit and the brothers who sell him to the Yishma'elim. So based on this, there's a tradition that they sold him to the Ishmaelim for 20 talents of silver, source 7. Kol achad ve'achad natal shnei ksafim liknot minalim beraglehem. Remember, we're 10 brothers here. So how much profit did each brother make? 20 talents of silver divided by 10 brothers. Each brother got 2 silver coins to go buy shoes for their feet. Shine emar, as it says, and it quotes the verse from Amos, which I give you down below, in full with vowels. Let's read the full verse from Amos. Amos, in the pshat of the pasuk, is not the prophet Amos, who's busy rebuking Malchut Yisrael before the destruction in the time of the first temple. Amos is clearly, according to the pshat, not talking about Mechirat Yosef. But as we will see, the phrase 20 talents of silver in Sefer Bereshit, plus what Amos is going to say much later in history, gets merged together by Chazal in the Midrashic tradition to be something else. Here's the verse from Amos. Ko amar Hashem, al shlosha pish'ei Yisrael, va'al arba'a lo ashivenu. Over the 3 major cardinal sins that the Jewish people have sinned, namely, giluy arayot, sexual impropriety, shpichut amim, murder, and Avodah Zarah, and let them not be punished. But for the fourth one, says God, Lo Ashivenu, I'm not going to let them get away with the fourth one. In other words, it's the fourth one that was the fourth sin that broke that was the straw that broke the camel's back. What's the fourth sin of the Jewish people in the time of Bayit Rishon that Hashem is telling Amos to tell the people that because of this one, they're for sure going to have to be punished? What's the fourth sin? Al michram bakesef tzaddik, that they, literally it means that they sold for money a tzaddik, ve'evyon ba'avorna alayim, and a poor person for shoes. Let's look at how that verse is understood in its context. Then we'll connect it back to see what the Midrashim try and do with that verse and how they connect it to Mechirat Yosef. The pshat of this phrase, al michram bakesef tzaddik ve'evyon ba'avorna alayim, I think is best explained by Mitzudat David. That al michram means that the sin of the first temple era, for which God cannot continue to overlook all the other big cardinal sins of the Jewish people, and for which Hashem must bring punishment, what's the sin? The sin is the whole breakdown of the legal system and the justice system in Eretz Yisrael at the time of the first temple. And what did they do? Al michram bakesef tzaddik. They let money buy somebody's tzidkut. A judge took bribes and let somebody's money and the sale of money determine who he declared as tzaddik, as the righteous one in the case, as the innocent one. Ve'evyon ba'avorna alayim, and the judges at this time were so corrupt that they were even willing to make an evyon, a poor person, into a tzaddik in a lawsuit by just even him bribing them with a pair of shoes, which wasn't a particularly valuable thing. So the pshat of what Amos is rebuking the Jewish people about has nothing to do with Mechirat Yosef. What Amos is rebuking the Jewish people about is that God tried to overlook the three cardinal sins and didn't bring the destruction, but the fourth sin, the sin of the entire breakdown of the legal system and of the bribery that was rampant, and not only big money, al michram bakesef tzaddik, but even little money, that a poor person might just bring his pair of shoes and give it to the judge, and the judge would still find him innocent. That, says Amos, in the name of God, is absolutely untenable, and because this is what society is like, God has no choice but to destroy them. Chazal read this pasuk in Amos as referring to Mechirat Yosef. Al michram bakesef tzaddik refers to an ancient time. When's the last time they sold somebody into slavery? And Yosef, remember Yosef. So for selling the tzaddik Yosef for money and a poor guy for shoes. And this becomes, for Chazal, the basis of a tradition that what did the brothers do with the money they got, the 20 talents of silver that they received for the sale of Yosef? They bought shoes with it. And then source 8, which we'll skip, repeats the tradition and asks a very interesting question. Wouldn't you think Yosef, who's such a handsome young man, should get more than 20 talents of silver? We'll leave aside the answer. Want to take one more interesting twist on this tradition before we get to Tisha B'Av in the next few minutes. And that is source number 9 that you have. This is what might be an unconventional source for some of you. Source number 9 is a source that comes from the Apocrypha, from the books that were contemporaneous with the books that were ultimately included in Tanakh, the 24 books of our Tanakh. But the Apocrypha are the books, Apocrypha means the books that are outside. In Hebrew we call them the Sfarim HaChitzoniim, the books that didn't get canonized, that didn't get included in our corpus of the 24 books of the Tanakh. But they're books from the same time period, which means that Chazal had their reasons for not including them in the Tanakh. Some of them might have included maybe what was perceived to be heretical statements. Some of them might have included things that the rabbis didn't deem as Torah, Tanakh, 24 books, canon appropriate. However, right, as readers of Tanakh, those books can often serve us as an interesting source of commentary because they're from the same period as the period of canonization, as the period of the end of the Tanakh. So in the books of the Apocrypha, there's a book called Tzavaot HaShvatim. In English, we call it the Testaments of the Tribes. Fascinating set of documents. It includes 12 testaments, one by each tribe. And again, this is all This isn't what was told in Sefer Bereshit, because we don't have the last will and testament of each of the 12 tribes in Sefer Bereshit. But in the Apocrypha, there is a book called The Testaments of the Tribes, where each tribe stands up on their deathbed, speaking to their descendants, and either confessing a particular sin that they were involved in, or recapping in their life, and giving their children a bit of musar, and a little bit, and setting out their last will and testament, what they pledge their children to do for them. In the testament of Zvulun, in the third chapter of his testament, we have a very interesting retelling of the story of Mechilat Yosef by Zvulun. We'll look at those verses, and then I'll tell you how we get from here to Tisha B'Av. And Zvulun's going to bring in this whole tradition about the shoes. Zvulun says, had just finished at the end of chapter 2 telling about the sale of Yosef, and he says in chapter 3, "Ubakesef scharo lo ayali chelek banai." He tells his sons, "I had no portion in the money that the brothers got for selling Yosef." Who did? Ki'im Shimon v'Dan v'Gad u'bneihem v'ikhud mechiro. So he blames three brothers, Shimon, Dan, and Gad. He says they were the ones who took the money, the 20 talents of silver, they and their sons. And they bought shoes for themselves, their children, and their wives. And why did they choose to buy shoes with the money from Mechirat Yosef? That wasn't something we were told why shoes in the rabbinic tradition. We were told it was money that they used for shoes. Here's Zvulun, first of all, places the blame on specific brothers. But more importantly, he's going to tell us why shoes and what the shoes here represent. And it's a fascinating tradition. These three brothers said, we're not going to use these 20 coins for buying food for our families, because after all, this is the money instead of our brother. We're not going to eat from the money that our selling our brother into slavery brought. So what will we do? We'll buy shoes. But what we'll do is we'll get shoes so that we can trample him. We can trample out this memory of Yosef. So here goes Zvulun on his deathbed telling his brothers, if you really want to know what happened, I'll tell you that after Yosef was sold, and I'm sorry, we're going to go 5 minutes over because we started late. He says, after Yosef was sold into slavery, three of the brothers took the money and they said, look, it's not nice to go buy food for our families with this money, because after all, this is the money from the sale of Yosef. So they went and they bought shoes with the goal of trampling out the entire memory of Yosef. Trampling out Yosef and all his big dreams, and ha ha ha, we'll stomp him out and we'll see what happens to his dreams. But Zvulun continues in verse 4 there. Ki al ken katuz de sefer Chanoch, it's written in the book of Chanoch, Enoch, another of these apocryphal works. Kol asher lo yachpot lahakim zera le'achav, v'chiltzu et na'alo v'yarku b'fanav. This is the what we know as chalitza process, the process of levirate marriages. But here it's being taken in a very different way. Somebody who doesn't want to marry his brother's wife takes off his shoe and spits on it and declares that they don't want to continue the brother's household. Well, here, this chalitza process is being attributed to what shoes after selling Yosef. Because they, says Zvulun, did something just like the person who doesn't want to do yibum and take the brother's wife. They don't want to continue the memory of Yosef. In verse 5, V'achei Yosef lo chafzu b'chaye acheihem, the brothers of Yosef didn't desire Yosef's life. V'yechaletz lahem na'alam asher na'alu b'fnei Yosef acheihem. And ultimately, they ended up having to take off these shoes before Yosef. And he retells the tradition that when the brothers came down to Egypt to bow down before Yosef, when they went to buy grain, they all took off their shoes, and he even puts in that they spit on him. So, what does this source tell us? This is telling us that not only is this rabbinic tradition of the brothers buying shoes alive and well, but that maybe this rabbinic tradition about the brothers buying shoes with the money from Mechirat Yosef may be connected to this notion of chalitza. It may be actually connected to the brothers making clear that they want nothing to do with building a future memory of Yosef. They want to wipe out everything connected to Yosef. So, the brothers sell Yosef for 20 coins of silver. It looks like an innocuous phrase in the Pesukim. Chazal connect the 20 talents of silver that the brothers use the brothers buy Yosef, sold Yosef into slavery with. The rabbis connect that with the verse in Amos, Al Michram Bakesef Tzadik Ve'Avyon Ba'Avor Na'alayim, that what Amos is rebuking the Jewish people about is the sale of Yosef for something so cheap as money that could just buy a pair of shoes. They couldn't even buy anything much larger than that. And here in the Testament of Zebulun, we have what we'll put in parentheses is a potential association of why particularly shoes. And he suggests they didn't want to buy food or something usable daily for their household like food, because after all, this is money from selling your brother into slavery. So they chose shoes, which would represent the trampling out of Yosef's memories, just like that happens in the chalitza process. Now, this rabbinic tradition of the brother selling Yosef into slavery for and buying shoes with it was clearly so prevalent that in Midrashim that describe the 10 martyrs during the period of the Romans, the period of the Second Temple, they link the story of the selling of Yosef for shoes with the plot by the Caesar, by the Roman ruler, for the 10 martyrs. Okay, we'll just look a few lines in the story. The story begins, this is source number 10, this is one of the Midrashim about it, and we have in the final page the parallel kina, the kina in poetic form of this midrash, which we recite on Tisha B'Av, and we recite it about the 10 martyrs, but many of you may not have noticed this line about the shoes being part of it. And the midrash goes as follows, that the Caesar was learning Torah, trying to find basis for killing Jews. And he found a pasuk in Parshat Mishpatim that says, V'gonev ishu mecharo, somebody who kidnaps a person and sells him, most yumat, they should be put to death. And what he did was he went and he covered all the walls of his house with shoes and stuck them on all the walls, and he called Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel and other great sages, and he said, hey, what's the halacha about somebody who gonev ishu mecharo? What's the din? And they answered him, chayav mita, he's liable for death, like the pasuk in Mishpatim. To them, if you want to follow in the midrash, we're in the middle of line 4. Amar lahem im kena tem chayavim mita. He says, well, you guys are liable for death right now. Kablu alatzmachem din shamayim. He says, better accept the verdict of heaven that you're liable for death. Amru lo lama, why are we liable for death? Amar lahem dishvil achei Yosef shemachruot Yosef. He says, don't you notice the shoes on the wall? You guys are liable for death because of what the brothers did for Yosef. They sold him into slavery, and he quotes the whole tradition of the shoes, and says, that's why I have shoes on my wall. And nobody was ever put to death for the sale of Yosef, he says. He said, I read the whole Torah, and now we're a few thousand years later, and you guys are the descendants of these brothers. Therefore, you must stand up and pay for what your fathers did. Your father sold a brother that they kidnapped, a person that they kidnapped, into slavery. The Torah says if you do that, you're liable for death, and they didn't. They even bought something as cheap as shoes. So look at the shoes on my wall, he says. You all are liable for death. And, of course, the sages here are shocked, and they're shocked that the Caesar is such a good darshan, that he knows how to read Parshat Mishpatim and Sefer Bereshit and Amos all together and find them guilty for Mechirat Yosef. And they ask for 3 days to come back and to think. And ultimately, as the Midrash concludes, these are the ten sages that were put to death at different periods during the Roman rule in Eretz Yisrael, and that they were killed, if you look at the last line, Elu hena sara haruge malchut, these are the 10 martyrs, shenehergu al shemachru et Yosef, that are killed by the Caesar for the sale of Yosef. They are midah keneged midah, filling in for the 10 brothers who sold Yosef. And source 11 is the very powerful kina that we recite on Tisha B'Av, called Ela Ezkara, in which we retell this midrash. We talk about the Caesar, the Roman ruler, reading the Torah and finding this verse, V'gonev yishu mecharo, z'nimtza b'yado mot yumat, and how he filled his whole house with shoes is in the third paragraph there, and he called 10 sages who understand Torah and Tilpul and all the drashot. And he said to them, what's the halacha? Tell me, am I right? Look on my walls, I see shoes. Ancestors killed a brother and took the money and bought shoes with it. Does it ring a bell? He says to them. What's the punishment? And they answer him, mot yumat. And he gives them their 3 days And ultimately, they're each killed, and the Kina concludes with the beginning of the killing of the different of the ten sages. So this tradition of the brother selling Yosef into slavery for shoes, while it may sound strange, is clearly central to the rabbinic tradition, so central that we have a whole Kina based on the shoes in Tisha B'Av liturgy. And again, this tradition is based on the 20 talents of silver in Sefer Bereishit, the verse in Amos that bribery was done, right, and that God couldn't forgive them selling Evyon Ba'avorna Alayim, a poor person for shoes, and that the rabbis link that with Yosef, and that maybe this is even linked, as we saw in the Testament of Zvulun, to the mitzvah of Chalitza, and that all of this ultimately has echoes later in Jewish history, that the ten brothers never got punished for Mechilat Yosef, so the Roman emperor comes later in history and thinks it's his job to punish the ten brothers who sold their brother and deserved to be killed, and he fills his house with shoes to remind them of this and to teach them and ultimately to kill them. So Be'ezrat Hashem, next week we will conclude our study of Yosef and his brothers, and we'll see how the roles of Yosef, Yehuda, and Binyamin, Yosef, Yehuda, and Reuven continue to play out in Sefer Bereishit. We'll come back to see how they were in chapter 37. We'll try and see what changed, who merits leadership, who has arguments of a potential leader, and who is the true brother in the story. Shabbat Shalom, and have a good week. Thank you.